Poor is the nation that has no heroes, but poorer still is the nation that, having heroes, fails to remember and honour them. So said Marcus Tullius Cicero, Roman lawmaker, scholar, theologian. Caruso, welcome. It's Podcast Pearl Droid. It's episode 106. My name is Russell. I'm with Leon and Gareth. We'll introduce those in a moment. But those words are in honour of, I think it's fair to say, two of our greatest players. One who retired last month. It's taken a little bit of a while to get round to paying tribute to Ashley Williams. Life does sometimes get in the way, however. He retired at the age of 36 and was our captain at Euro 2016. We know what he will need reminding. And also, sadly, we lost Di Davis, who lost his battle with cancer earlier this week. And he was an integral member of the late 70s, early 80s success that the national team experienced. And we'll start with Di. Leon, you actually met him once.
Yeah, very briefly, like back in the late 90s. And I was with my mum. I'd have been in my late teens, I think, at the time. I was with my mum and we were going to meet a friend of hers in Llangollen who was working at Di Davis's Alternative Health Centre. And I can't remember exactly what he did, if he was a reflexologist or an osteopath or something like that. But it's just not the sort of place you expect to meet an ex-footballer, really. Lovely place, just next to the river there on the... I remember, my mum sort of clocked him, recognised him, and said something like, oh, you're Di, aren't you? And he goes, yeah. And she goes, when I lived in Wrexham in the 70s, I used to go and so you play loads of time for Wales as well. And his reply was, I'm very sorry to hear that. I just really seemed like a really sound guy, really interesting guy, something of a Renaissance man, involved in quite a few different things, and as Welsh as they come, really, from Ammanford, sort of the Ammon Valley there, which is sort of a real sort of rugby union stronghold. I think that's where Shane Williams is from, isn't it? That sort of that part of the world. But he always wanted to be a goalkeeper, and his big hero growing up was Jack Kelsey, the Wales and Arsenal legend. Yeah, and then obviously he ended up playing for Wrexham and he stuck around in North Wales after his playing days, and he was involved in a Welsh crafts and bookshop in Mould, I think, and then in an open health centre in Llangollen, and was also on S4C and as a footy pundit on a regular basis. So kind of became a bit of an adopted gog, really. First Welsh keeper to win 50 caps, I'm pretty sure. And was part of that great team which got to the quarterfinals of the European Championships in 76 and came so close to reaching the 78 and 82 World Cups as well. They're a legend.
I think this is the thing. I'm too young to remember him playing. So I really first encountered him, other than what you might have read about him, was when he was doing punditry and almost entirely, I think, from memory, Welsh language punditry. At first, I thought there was something slightly curmudgeonly about him and a bit, dare I say, a bit old-fashioned. And I think I came to realise, actually, that it's more a paternal thing. He was clearly a very proud man, and any number of instances and anecdotes in his book suggest this. I suppose it was a bit of a traditional, mining, working class, well-speaking upbringing. You know, he was a proud man. He didn't suffer fools, and I think it's more that paternal thing, actually, that comes through. So it's not him being old-fashioned and a curmudgeon, as I say. It's him having a bit more of a frank and honest and a disciplined sort of take on things. If he has something to say, he'll speak his mind. And in his book, he falls out with quite a few people, actually. He exchanges quite a few words with Mike England, and by all accounts, England was quite a fun guy, quite laid back, easygoing guy. There's that sense that Di didn't think something was right. He was going to say it.
like you, Russ, we're of a generation that's a bit young to have seen him play, but I've really been interested in reading little bits and bobs about him this week. And the way you describe it there is kind of what comes across. He's of a generation where careers were less likely to have pretension about them and a certainty about them. I suppose there's a link to Ashley Williams in that sense, although he's kind of rarer today. But I was kind of reading that he didn't really get into the game professionally until he was about 21. He finished his sort of teacher training first and signed for Swansea because he could earn an extra £3 a week at Swansea compared to what he might get as a teacher. Similarly, when he makes his Wales debut, you know, in the year prior to that, there was talk that he might leave football. He'd been struggling to get games at Everton, but he doesn't. The debut comes along. It might not have worked out moments, but for him now to have had the sort of career he did and the performances in the 76 campaign and those two World Cup campaigns. Yeah, really kind of interesting character to sort of read and find out now. I was watching today that campaign for the 82 World Cup where we come very, very close. It's kind of but doesn't quite get remembered the same ways as sort of 78 and some of the ones from the sort of 90s, does it? But we'd started really, really strongly and he'd I think you have to go back to sort of the previous World Cup qualifying campaign. But he'd gone something like 500 minutes of World Cup qualifiers without conceding a goal. I was watching today. When you watch it closely, isn't it? It kind of spins back off the post and then into the net. And it looks like it's come back off his back. And after that, we lose to Czechoslovakia and very, very close to play a number of major tournaments. And we've talked a lot, haven't we, about more recent Wales goalkeepers and how lucky we tend to be that there's only ever really one credible first choice goalkeeper we can pick. And we rely on those keepers then to come into the team and be able to play for, you know, 8, 9, 10 years without missing too many games, just to give us some kind of stability as a team and not be shipping goals left, right and centre. And, you know, reading about him, he seems to be another example of that kind of keeper that we've had in our history.
Yeah, he did come into the game late, guys, you're right. And it's not a career that appeared to have this, you know, upward trajectory from day one, really. It didn't really kind of all fall into place and click, as it were, until sort of his mid to late 20s, which I suppose if you're a goalkeeper, tend to have longer careers, isn't the end of the world.
Yeah, he was 27 when he made his Wales debut, but still pretty impressive that he got 52 caps, considering his debut didn't come to the age 27 and there weren't so many games back then. And of course, we didn't actually qualify for a tournament during his time as well. So he racked up some pretty impressive numbers.
Yeah, he comes into the side after the likes of Gary Sprigg, was probably more the first choice. Not that he played a huge number of games in the time available. Slightly sort of questionable attitude, I think. As well, of course, the influence of Don Revie. I don't think Don Revie was a huge fan of international football, let alone countries like us. Your players like Glenn Letheren, Gren Millington got call-ups. Brian Lloyd had a handful of caps when Di got injured, including obviously the in 76 at the racecourse against Austria. But yeah, you know, it is impressive. He was our most capped goalkeeper until Big Nev came along, obviously taking his place. We'll come to that in a moment. But he played his part in some important games as well.
Just thinking, actually, sorry, Russ, but is he the last South Walian to be the undisputed first choice? I mean, I can't, because obviously he was sort of replaced by Southall, who in turn was replaced by Paul Jones. Yeah, I mean, you can go back and say since Davis made his debut in SEM, there's only really been four kind of out-and-out first-choice keepers for Wales in terms of him, then Southall, then Paul Jones, then Wayne Hennessy, all winning a lot of caps and being the undisputed number one, really.
Yeah, no, I mean, overwhelmingly, it's been North Walians. And even if you look at the backup keepers in the 80s, Tony Roberts, David Fellgate, a lot of those are from North Wales as well. Danny Coyne, I suppose, comes just a little bit between Paul Jones and Wayne Hennessy. But yeah, no, the overall pattern and the trajectory is clearly how you describe it, Leon. Tony Norman, another one from North Wales in the 80s, has understudied to Big Nev. So it's not just the age at which he finally gets his caps. He comes into the side for, you know, a huge game away to Hungary. You've written about it because it was only Brian Flynn's, I think, second cap, Leon.
Yeah,
tell us a bit more about this famous game at the Nep Stadion.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't. I think the Hungarians put a bit of pressure on us towards the end, and he had to kind of hold firm we were hanging on a bit for 2-1, but it was you know, a really good performance. Once, funnily enough, Toshak had missed a penalty, we just took control for a good portion of that game. It seems from the footage that I've seen of that game. Anyway, difficult in that, yeah, it was not a place where many teams came and won, but it was also, I suppose he was lucky in that he came into a good team that was on the up. Some good players were just like really starting to make their mark. Like Flynn, obviously, came on as sub for Leighton James. John Mahoney scored a really good goal in that game. Yeah, so it was a good team to come into.
Don't want to sort of fall into the trap of measuring our football team's success on our record against England, but given the last, I don't know, whatever, 40, 35 years, and the fact we haven't beaten him in such a long time, he must be one of a very select group of players from that era and since that's been in a team that's beat England twice. Because he was in the team in 77 and then again in 1980 in the 4-1, wasn't he?
Here's a question for you. Who's the only Welsh footballer to have beaten England three times?
Oh, that's a fantastic question. Is it the three games, 77, 80 and 84?
Yes, it is, yeah. 77, 80 and 84.
Oh, so someone like, I don't know, Joey Jones?
Yes, or, got it. Joey. It's the only man to have beaten England three times, only Welshman to have beaten England three times.
Good fact,
yeah. Because, Di Davis didn't play in 84.
No, I think he finished in 82. Southall by then. Yeah, Southall had come in by then.
Yeah, and so when Southall comes in, I mean, the two of them, they actually shared a room. And towards the end of Di's career, his international career, so Di's last few caps, Nev's first few caps, more or less alternated. So England is clearly looking to evolve the team in that respect. He'd already given lots and lots of debuts in the year or two before. And to be fair to Di Davis, very, very encouraging, very, very complimentary of Neville Southall. Again, back to this thing, if he felt something needed to be said, he would say it. He comments in his book about how Big Nev's distribution, he felt needed quite a bit of work, but that there was a very promising keeper. But at the same time, he's quite critical of Mike England, who he felt had been a bit two-faced with him. And he felt, actually, despite all of the compliments that he had for and that he paid for Nev, he felt that actually, given that he was in the top flight with Swansea and that Nev had to go to, I think, the fourth division, Port Vale at the time, certainly lower league, in order to find games on loan from Everton, that actually it should have been him starting. So again, this almost like a bit of a dual, not dual personality, that would be unfair, but this dichotomy of whereby, yes, I'm all for supporting the other players and the youngsters coming through, but actually this is my position and I deserve it because this is where I'm playing and this is where my competitor is.
Talking of paternal, because I just wrote a little bit about him for a piece I'm working on for Shag, which is a Wrexham fanzine friend Ryan puts together. I think you've written for it as well, haven't you, Russ? About self-Walians who play for Wrexham. And so I've got Di in goal, obviously. So just reading a bit about him, and I found out that his father, who was a miner, actually built the family home himself.
Yeah, and I think that fits with the upbringing he had. I mean, as I said, he falls out of Mike England. He has some strong words in his book to say about some players. Jeremy Charles is one that comes to mind. He talks about how he's basically wasting his talent. Davis appears to have quite a strong moral code, and if he felt something was remiss, he would say it. But there's also a passage in his book where towards the end of it, it's one of the final games, it may even be the final game, I can't remember now, but he admits to basically drinking a bit too much after the team has arrived in London before heading out. It's definitely somewhere in Eastern Europe. And he drinks a bit too much with Brian Flynn, as it happens, and gets into a bit of trouble with the FA councillors. And, there's pressure for him to be dropped from the councillors, but Mike England's having none of that. So it's interesting that, by this point he's a senior pro. He's probably in his, mid-30s by this point. And you'd be going early to mid-30s. So, yes, he has this strong moral code, but he wasn't this puritanical figure either. He let his hair down and by his own admission, drank too much. So, on this one evening. So, yeah, as you say, Leon, bit of a Renaissance man, and actually was quite progressive then in some of his views. A really, really interesting character.
I was just going to say, on that topic of him coming from rugby country and being a good rugby player, I read earlier today that he'd sort of played you know, good standard as a sort of schoolboy. He played with like Paul Ringer and Selwyn Williams. But he dropped the rugby after Ammanford United had lost 4-0, and he was to blame for all four goals. So he played a rugby match earlier that day. So I think that kind of as I read it today, was what sort of prompted the change. But it's interesting how many of those players who go on to be big in a sport have got that sort of background of, you know, being multi-talented in a number of sports, even going way back.
Yeah, no, he was a talented second row and a big man. I mean, it doesn't necessarily come through when you're sitting on a couch doing the pundit work. But I mean, these days he'd probably be considered small just for a centre, let alone in the second row, of course. But yeah, talented in both codes and had to make a choice.
I was going to say about him being a teacher as well, Gaz. I think he still did bits of supply work, even like later on in life, up in sort of around in North East Wales. Because a few people have sort of mentioned on Twitter that he'd come into their school to teach them or to coach them and stuff like that. So, you know, he never completely dropped that. So. A real people person, I think.
Yeah, I read as recently as like the sort of 90s, he was working as a supply teacher in Hollywell. And yeah, he's probably the generation, isn't it, that, you know, didn't come out of football, and despite, you know, levels of success in national football, guarantee that they could just go into coaching, go into the media, or live on sort of the massive salaries that, you know, a lot of top modern footballers earn. And, you know, he's clearly got interesting stories beyond football.
Guys, just on this issue of professional footballers earning £3 more a week than teachers, is that still the case? Is that something you want to...
When I get offered my first professional football contract, I'll let you know.
Okay, so let's move on to Ashley Williams, arguably our greatest captain. I don't think there's a huge amount of quarrel there among Welsh fans. You know, some decent competition there as well, with the likes of Ratcliffe and Yorath and Speed. Remarkable longevity. Only four people have represented Wales more times than Ashley Williams, which, considering he didn't have under 21 caps, he didn't have junior caps, he came into the team late, all of which we will discuss. Yeah, this remarkable stat of Ashley's that he played, so between his first cap against Luxembourg and his last cap, so I haven't quite counted forward the games that he, I suppose, in theory was available for but wasn't selected for, up until his final cap against Hungary away, he played in 87% of Wales games since he made that first cap. And, you know, that's a remarkable sort of durability. It's a remarkable consistency. I mean, some might argue it points to a lack of alternative options, maybe, or lack of defensive strength in depth. I guess there's a different, you know, number of ways you can dress the stats up, clearly. But for me, I would err towards the former, a position that, you know, picks up a lot of cards in, you know, usually.
Yeah, that point about his record of appearances for Wales is pretty incredible. And I guess maybe it gets a little bit less focus than it might be expected to from Wales fans, because it's marginally behind Chris Gunter's equally kind of incredible record. And of course, as Gunter's approached 100 caps, that's been the big talk of how many consecutive games he played and his sort of appearance record. But Ash isn't far behind that. And if you take out the Giggs era, when he's already sort of come into the end of his career, he plays 76 out of 84 games 2008 and the end of the 2018 World Cup qualifiers. He misses 8 in that entire time, not over 9 years. Only one through suspension. He didn't get suspended a lot, despite being very sort of full-blooded centre-half style player. But even out of those 8 games he missed, only 2 of them are injured. So he misses the double header at the end of the 2014 World Cup campaign. Other games he missed, Swansea were in the playoffs, that were a kind of pointless double header in that sort of rubbish attempt to bring back that home nation's championship. And I'm pretty certain that had Swansea in the playoffs, he'd have been there amidst 10 other players dropping out. And that was a real measure of the kind of player he was and what it meant to him to play for Wales.
Those stats are amazing, actually, in terms of longevity and consistency of appearance as well. Something you often find with people who do get into the game a bit later is that they want to sort of make up for lost time, don't they? And they sort of create what a sort of honour it is, really, in a way, to be a professional footballer and to play international football. You know, he just got that sense that he never, like, took it any of it for granted, because he knew He knew what it was like on the other side to be working in a petrol station and working as a waiter and what have you. Yeah, it's well worth listening to the podcast that he did with Ellis James and Danny Gabaldon and Ewan Roberts. He just comes across so well. He always did, to be fair. Like, I always enjoyed listening to him talk because he had that humility and, you know, intelligent as well. And yeah, we haven't talked about his captaincy yet, but what a great captain as well, and arguably our greatest ever captain.
Although it's technically undisclosed, general consensus is that he transferred to Swansea for £400,000 and was sold for £12 million to Everton, as well as having terrific service out of him over a number of years. Oh. You know, arguably the club's, well, it's not even arguably, you know, the club's greatest era. I mean, has there ever been a better bit of business involving a Welsh player ever? 400k, terrific service, and then gets sold for £12 million. I mean, they saw Everton come in, let's be perfectly honest there, but that's remarkable.
Well, it's astonishing, is it? Because it speaks to a sort of something that's been lost, the idea that as a professional footballer, you might work your way up the divisions to become a really top flight player. It very rarely happens in this sort of era of academy, you know, it happens a bit, but Ash is a great example of that. And I got into a bit of a wormhole when I saw that figure, £400,000, that he signs for Swansea, age 24, just as they're going into the Championship. And I had a look at the transfers that took place that same year. So we're already into the era of like big money transfers, perhaps not the scale of today, but this is the sort of era when like Rubinho and Berbatov were costing sort of 30-odd million for the top clubs. But I got a bit nerdy and I looked, right, which centre-halves moved to sort of Premier League clubs that summer? Carlos Cuellar going from Glasgow Rangers to Aston Villa for 8 million. Tal Ben-Haim, who was already established at Chelsea, went to Man City for 5 million and it didn't really work out for him there. And you just look at all those kind of clubs as they were at that time and think, would it have been a worse bit of business for them to spend a bit of pocket change on a gamble from a couple of leagues lower than it was to spend that sort of money on, you know, okay, had, you know, reasonable careers and played a few seasons at that clubs. But you don't see very often that sort of success story of someone just, you know, taking a bit of a punt on a player who's clearly good in the second or third tier and thinking, do you know what, we can turn them into a Premier League player. And, you know, I know it's hindsight's a wonderful thing. And of course, he sort of worked his way up there with kind of Championship level experience at Swansea. But, you know, that potential must have always been there. And you wonder if clubs ever look to that anymore.
So, quick question. In the back three that we played in that Luxembourg game, Ash made his debut alongside which two other central defenders?
Craig Morgan.
Yep, Craig Morgan.
Oh, how about Nyatanga?
You guys are good.
Well, we're chucking questions around there. Let's have a mini interlude because I'm cheating a little bit because I've got a list in front of me of all the players who've ever played in a back two or three with Ashley Williams. How many do you reckon there are?
Well, Ricketts.
Yeah.
Morgan and Nyatanga, obviously.
Gabaldon, Collins.
Yeah. Chester.
Some Collins.
So right at the top, you've got Chester. Chester played with them most times. 28 times they were in a two or a three together. Davis, 22. James Collins, 16. And you've got a couple of names you've just mentioned, Morgan, Nyatanga. But as you go down a list, like what was kind of interesting to see is like, this is a career that straddles playing alongside sort of Craig Morgan and Steve Evans, in fact, in one game. But also then he played two games alongside Chris Meppham. He played a game alongside James Lawrence. You know, here's a guy who's played in the same Wales team as Craig Bellamy and Ethan Ampadu. You know, this is an extraordinary era-spanning career when you look at it like that.
Wow. Quality statting. On a similar theme, though, do you know who the other two debutants in that Luxembourg game? One was a keeper, for a clue.
2008, was it? Goalkeeper. Blimey. Was that Lewis Price?
Nope. No, Price started that game. Oh. Already had a handful of caps under his belt. No, the debutant came on for the second half and was Boaz Myhill. Leon, I mean, I think probably most of us are familiar with the story of how Brian Flynn discovered Ashley Williams, but do you want to regale us with the tale again?
Hennessy was on loan there from Wolverhampton Wanderers at the time. And Flynn to check up on the players, you know, not necessarily always his players as well, because Hennessy by that point, I think, was already sort of in the senior squad. But, you know, Toshak living in Spain wasn't one to to go out to Wedgley Park of a Saturday afternoon, whereas Flynn, you know, Flynn just loved it. He was going to 12 games a week at the time, something like that. And defensively, excellent. Hennessy had a clean record, which I'm pretty sure is a league record, something like 12 games in a row. Still is, yeah. And it broke a long-standing record of like over 100 years or something. And he just basically used to ask the question, if anyone heard a Welsh name, you know, have you got a Welsh parent or grandparent? I think he got in touch with Peter Ward, who was a fantastic player at Wrexham in the 90s, who Flynn signed, and was assistant manager at Stockport at the time. And he just said, oh, can you maybe ask your centre-back Williams if he's got any Welsh family? So Peter Ward pulled him aside and just said that Brian Flynn had been inquiring about him and have you got any Welsh in you? And he said, my mum's side of the family are Welsh. The story is that Peter Ward then said to him, oh, you could nick a cap here. 86 caps later, European Championship semi-final, he nicked a few caps. So in Stockport County, League Two at the time, so it wasn't really on his radar to play international football. And just the idea of like nicking a cap seemed a bit of a dream to him. So he just took everything in his stride. And then, you know, Flynn recommended him to Toshack. He was already too old for the under-21s by that point, 23, nearly 24, I think. And Toshack went and had a look and called him into the squad. And as we've discussed already, he was a fixture ever since then, really.
We say a lot, don't we, on this podcast, that we wouldn't dream of sort of trying to speak to what gives you the right to sort of identify with Wales and wanting to play for the team and anything like that, you know. But given that, it's almost by accident that his Wales career comes about and that he is one of those players who qualifies by virtue of a grandparent. It's all the more extraordinary that his career as an international player for us and as a captain for that has so much kind of embodies what your average fan might see as how the game should be played or how you should approach the game if you're a football player. If you sort of think through like the characteristics of as him as a Welsh international, a professional footballer and a captain. You know, I read in Chris Wotham's article on his retirement talking about how he'd kind of deliberately start arguments with other players on the pitch to get himself fired up. You know, we saw later in his career that maybe when his body wouldn't do the things that, you know, he wanted to do, would have done previous in career, it was frustrating for him. And he kind of sparked that brawl for Everton against Leon, didn't he? Then you get these heart overhead moments where he won't come off against Northern Ireland because, I'm going to carry on. You know, he never missed games unless he had to. He hardly ever scored a goal, but if he did score a goal, he goes absolutely nuts. Okay, I suppose, you know, in a quarter final against Belgium, anyone might. He played in the good times and the bad. I could be describing some guy playing Parks football there, couldn't I? That could be the way your average player plays because they love the game. There's no airs and graces. There's no ego about him at all. I also read in that same Chris Wotham article that his agent persuaded him to release an article, sorry, to release a press statement saying he'd retired because he felt it was a bit of an egotistical thing to do. And I know he wasn't ending a career like his at Swansea where he'd spent a huge amount of time. But kind of it got me imagining, well, what would his last game for Swansea have looked like if that was the end of his career as well? I don't think it would have had the stage managed fanfare of like a John Terry exit, for example, from Chelsea. Equally, we don't on this podcast speak to club colours and club rivalry very often, but he took pelters at times at the Cardiff City Stadium, particularly early on in his career. You know, and I'm a Cardiff fan. I absolutely love Ashley Williams for what he's done for Welsh football. And, you know, he's an absolute legend, absolute hero, no doubt about it.
I know you got your hands full there, Leon, with little Marvin, but quickly, we've got to mention the Belgium goal.
What a celebration. What a celebration that was. I mean, it was just joyous. It was like, have you ever seen a footballer look more happy to score a goal? I mean, there's the Italian guy, is it Tardelli in the 82 World Cup final? I mean, there's like this kind of incredible passion on his face, but it's almost like something sort of manic and kind of frantic about the way he looks. Whereas Ashley Williams, it's just like this sort of pure joy, isn't it? It's just Incredible. Love that goal. Love that celebration.
Thinking about that goal, kind of just reflecting on it, on his retirement in the last sort of week or so, and a couple of things kind of become apparent. He only scored one other goal for Wales, didn't he? Scored in a 5-1 win against Luxembourg in about 2010. Could there have been a sort of less consequential goal in his Wales career than Strawberry in the Park, friendly and Llanelli in front of a handful of people, you know? And the only other time he scores for Wales is this sort of incredible moment in this incredible sort of quarterfinal. And Leon's absolutely right. That celebration, that moment, and the sort of, I guess, the I'm fine, I'm not coming off against Northern Ireland. Two absolute iconic moments of that that tournament that they're just with us for forever in Welsh footballing history. But the other thing I hadn't really thought about, although we may have talked about it before, is that game and that win that's so sort of iconic for Welsh football fans, that it's him scoring the equaliser and then Hal and Sam Vokes getting a goal. Notwithstanding the fact Bale played and Ramsey played and they were excellent, it gives it that sort of air of something that's slightly apart from those games where Gareth Bale sort of wins it in, you know, with turning up with his goal, or the accusations that we're a one-man team or whatever because of Gareth Bale, that what characterised sort of the greatest Welsh football team was this guy who came from, you know, a £400,000 move from Stockport to Swansea to captain Wales, and then this other guy who didn't have a club sort of doing a Cruyff term and scoring the goal. He is a sort of an example of something that's a real characteristic of what it was to achieve that semi-final performance at Euro 2016, just having one or two really top world-class players. And we couldn't have done it, you know, without them, but we couldn't have done it without people like Ash and people like Hal and people like Sam Vokes as well.
Yeah, no, that's a more than valid point. Yeah, yeah. And I think we've all heard this before, haven't we? I'm sure, but his his heart rate during that celebration was the highest it reached all tournament, I think. Yeah.
It's the fastest sprint of a tournament as well.
And something to point out as well, I quite like about that goal, but actually in the Northern Ireland game, so when his namesake Johnny manages, to be fair, not to spontaneously combust on impact, given his injury record over the years, when he collides with Ashley, if you go then roll forward to the celebrating the Belgium goal, and if you just look at the images of Ashley running towards the crowd on the touchline, or the crowd of players on the touchline, and Johnny is just tucked in behind, I think it's Martin Margotson, and to be fair, Johnny already knows what it's like to collide with the big man, like being hit by a runaway Volvo, but he's still there front and centre, about to kind of basically get clattered again. So yeah, shout out to Johnny. So what of his future then? Do we see him going into management, into coaching? I mean, what if Steve Cooper's to get poached from Swansea? Do we see him rocking up there?
Yeah, I think I heard him sort of speaking about, like, you know, I guess it's kind of influenced by the circumstances of the last year or so, but I kind of listened to him interviewed about that. You came across very sort of, well, grounded, and as we've been talking about, no sort of entitlement or sort of airs and graces. He talked about, you know, being able to put a bit more in with his kids and his family because of, you know, the demands of being a professional footballer have obviously made that more difficult in previous years. And he's talked about not having to rush any decisions. And I think also speaks to quite a healthy way to sort of view your next steps after the game, which, you know, a lot of professional footballers will find very hard, I'm sure, that, you know, he can take his time and think about it. And, you know, I think that's also something that speaks to his character as someone who kind of approached the game the way he did.
And might he be on the radar of a certain Canadian-American consortium, Leon? What do you reckon?
We'll have Steve Cooper back at Wrexham, actually. That'd be great. We can poach him from the Swans. I can definitely see Ashley Williams as a manager. He's got all the attributes, hasn't he? If he wants to do it, I'm sure he'd make a pretty good go of it. Wouldn't be surprised to see him back for Wales sometime as manager. It's entirely possible.
As we were sort of preparing this, what struck me was the number of similarities between the two players. Both played for Everton, both come into the game relatively late, both ascend to international football, say from out of nowhere, but again relatively late, I suppose. Both played under Toshack, both played for Swansea in the top flight. So all these similarities, despite having, you know, I think it's fair to say, quite different upbringings. Yeah, it just struck me quite how similar the two players were. And I think another respect where there's a similarity is they both appeared to really kind of wring out as much of the talent as they had. Probably by their own admission, not two of the most gifted and talented players, but they made the most of what they've got. And certainly Nash's case, and we talked about this in the Toshak years, you know, there were probably more talented and gifted players available to us who weren't and arguably didn't go on to make the most of the talent that they had. Let's leave it there. So all the best in retirement, Ashley, Errol Williams, and rest in peace, Cusgwch Mewn Hedd, William David, Di Davis.
You could get a lot of joy out of this. Ramsey turns. Oh, it's
it's